What's the universe at time? Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa, coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Steve Norman reporting. Turkey's President Recep Tayyip Erdogan says the gunman who attacked an Istanbul nightclub early Sunday, killing 39, wanted to create pandemonium in the country, but failed. There was no immediate claim of responsibility for that attack. Witnesses said as many as 600 people were inside the club at the time of the attack. VOA asked Deakin University terrorism expert Greg Barton if Turkey is now ground zero for terrorism.
Unfortunately, it's looking that way, Victor. There's a strong correlation around the world between the breakdown of good governance and the extent to which terrorist groups can embed themselves. We see this with Nigeria, obviously with Syria, Iraq, Afghanistan, Pakistan, Somalia. Unfortunately, Turkey is joining in that list. In the last 3 or 4 years, between 70 and 80% of all terror deaths have occurred in those 5-6 countries. It looks like in 2017 that Turkey is going to be another one of those countries where the slide away from democracy and good governance in the name of security actually undermines its own security.
Sunday's mass shooting followed more than 30 violent acts over the past year in Turkey. President-elect Donald Trump here in the U.S. is casting new doubt on the U.S. intelligence community's conclusion Russia meddled in the presidential election through computer hacking, a finding that led President Obama to impose sanctions on Moscow. Mr. Trump said it would be unfair to make the allegations against Moscow if there were any uncertainty about who did the hacking. There is an agreement among the Democratic Republic of Congo's political factions to try to defuse the crisis over President Joseph Kabila's extended rule. Mr. Kabila was supposed to have left office December 20th, but his ruling party proposed new elections in 2018. This is VOA News. Syrian monitors are saying hundreds of civilians have fled villages outside the Syrian capital as Syrian warplanes carried out attacks on rebel-held Wadi Barada near the Damascus capital despite the ceasefire. Trinity University analyst David Lesh tells VOA the government justified the attack because of the presence of Islamist fighters from Fatah al-Sham, formerly al-Nusra, who were not covered by the truce.
Because the former Jabhat al-Nusra, they have elements and forces in a number of areas in Syria, the Syrian government can make the claim that, you know, since they are not part of the truce, that they're continuing the fight against them in almost any part of the country they want.
The Russia-Syria and Turkey negotiated truce is aimed at paving the way for peace talks in Kazakhstan later this month. Israel's Security Cabinet has decided not to return the bodies of Hamas terrorists killed by Israeli forces, but to bury its remains themselves. The cabinet made its decision after Hamas posted a video mocking an Israeli soldier who was killed in Gaza in 2014. Hamas took the custody of that body, that of another, a second soldier, and never returned the bodies. South Korea today said North Korean leader Kim Jong-un showed determination to continue nuclear provocations through his New Year's address on Sunday. Jung Jun-hee, a spokesman for the South's unification ministry, said Kim showed again his determination to continue those provocations by mentioning a stronger nuclear state, the completion of the phase of an ICBM, and preemptive striking attacks. In his New Year's address to the nation, Kim Jong-un hinted Pyongyang may ring in the new year with another test launch of an intercontinental ballistic missile. On New Year's Day, Ban Ki-moon ended 10 years at the helm of the United Nations, lamenting that the fires are still burning from Syria to South Sudan, but he said he's proud of a global climate change agreement and new UN goals to fight poverty and inequality. Mr. Ban is succeeded by former Portuguese Prime Minister Antonio Guterres, who says the world must commit itself to helping people who are under siege.
Women, children, and men are killed and injured, forced from their homes, dispossessed and destitute. And even hospitals and aid convoys are targeted. No one wins these wars. Everyone loses. Trillions of dollars are spent destroying societies and economies, fueling cycles of mistrust and fear that can last for generations.
Guterres has promised to be a bridge builder as UN Secretary General. Get more news at our website. You can find us at voanews.com.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Bate in Washington. Today is Monday, January 2nd, 2017. And here are some of the stories we are covering. The opposition in the DRC is pleased with a Christmas Eve deal that calls for President Kabila to leave power this year.
What we like about this agreement is the position that this year we must have elections. And Mr. Kabila wants to run no more. And he can't change the constitution, and he can't organize a referendum.
Arba Puella is a member of the Rassemblement, the main coalition of opposition political parties in the DRC. In Liberia, a coalition involving George Weah's party has been certified to contest the 2017 elections. And South Sudan's first vice president wishes his country peace and development in the new year.
In the new year, they should expect more peace, more development, more delivery of services, reconciliation and healing. I think you are aware my president has announced national healing and reconciliation, the dialogue.
Tabandengai, South Sudan's first vice president, Kenya establishes new rules to protect workers dealing with electronic waste recycling. And international students and school recruiters in the United States eye President-elect Trump's position on visas. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley's sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. In the Democratic Republic of Congo, a member of the main coalition of opposition political parties known as the Rassemblement says the group is pleased with a Christmas Eve agreement that would end months of violent protests and killings. Abra Puella said what the group likes most about the agreement is the call for elections by December this year and the fact that President Kabila will not run nor call referendum to change the constitution. Mr. Kabila was supposed to leave power on December 19, 2016. Puella says the agreement calls for the setting up of the national unity government headed by a prime minister to be chosen by the Rassemblement.
We have said, because we're supposed to have election last year, but we didn't have it. But for this year, we had to set up a transitional period without Mr. Kabila. But Mr. Kabila is still there. The people of Congo didn't really agree about it, but we had an agreement. It's a good thing we can say, but we prefer to have another transitional president. But anyway, we accept this agreement.
Now, what do you like about this agreement?
What we like about this agreement is the position that this year we must have elections. That's the really important thing. And Mr. Kabila wants to run no more. And he can't change the constitution and he can't organize a referendum. That's really a good thing because he's planning to change the constitution and to organize a referendum so that he can be maintained in the office.
The information minister, Lambert Mendes, says the agreement does not respect democracy.
Oh, no. You know the man. He used to say that if you don't, what doesn't respect democracy is not organizing. They didn't organize elections by purpose. So if we have an agreement, and in this agreement had to say that Mr. Kabila has to leave the office, but he's still there. This why he's saying that we didn't respect the constitution.
The agreement talk about transitional government, and so when would that transitional government come into play?
According to the agreement, for the coming days, Mr. Tshisekedi has to choose the one who is going to lead the government. And this government must be set up in the coming 15 days because the National Assembly will go in holidays. So we have to do what you call in French. We have to make the investment of this government. To accept
Mr. Puella, for some time now, the opposition has complained about the fairness of the National Election Commission, SINE. Under this agreement, is the opposition going to be represented on the National Elections Commission?
Yes, that's what is one of points which have been dealt about the agreement. They have to make another office. Another office they have, where the expression was used is to redynamize the National Election Commission, saying that we have to change the leaders of this commission.
So I can see that this is 2017 is starting up like good news for the Democratic Republic of Congo.
Good news only if Mr. Kabila accepts to execute the agreement.
Mr. Puella, Happy New Year to you again.
Happy New Year to you and all your listeners. Thank you so much, sir. May God bless our country, and we really want peace, and we want democracy, and we want elections.
Albert Puella is a member of the leading coalition of opposition political parties in the DRC, known as the Rassemblement. He was speaking with me from the capital, Kinshasa. In Liberia, the Coalition for Democratic Change, the CDC, comprising three political parties, has been certified by the National Elections Commission to compete in the 2017 general elections. The three parties are George Weah's Congress for Democratic Change, the National Patriotic Party of former President Charles Taylor, and the Liberian People Democratic Party of former Speaker of the House of Representatives Alex Tyler. George Weah came second in the last two presidential elections. Nathaniel McGee, chairman of the coalition, says it is most likely that Mr. Weah will be chosen later this month as the coalition's standard bearer. McGee says Liberians are enthusiastic about the coalition. He says given the anti-incumbent sentiments in Africa and elsewhere in the world, the ruling Unity Party faces a possible defeat in October this year.
The last 12 years, I like where the leader, nothing much has been done, and the thing is, it's time for change. Considering what is happening in Africa now, you see most people believe that incumbency has been a problem, and they put their interest first and the interest of the people last. In Liberia, we're not seeing nothing. I mean, planted their water is not 10 Liberian dollars, something with $5, not 10 Liberian dollars. The house reserve is too much. And so by coming together, including the strength of the Congress for Democratic Change. Now we're on the Coalition for Democratic Change. As you know, the last two elections, many of us were believed that the Congress for Democratic Change easily won those elections. However, the Congress of the election, the result was that the Congress became second. Now that we've increased our strength, numerical strength, by having other two parties, and other parties are, I believe, will join, I think the possibility for us to win and bring about the necessary change that is required.
As you said, Mr. McGill, Ambassador Weah has run in the last two elections, and he has already announced that he is going to be standing for the 2017 election. Has the coalition decided who is going to be the standard bearer?
Well, the way the document is written, you can assume that Ambassador Weah is a presumptive nominee. The document says the Congress of Democratic Change will nominate the standard bearer of the coalition. And that nomination will be done on the 21st of January, and a vice president will be chosen. And so, as the chairperson of the Congress of Democratic Change, I can simply say to you that Ambassador Weah will be our nominee. And so, therefore, there is no contestation on the issue of who will be the head of the coalition.
There are those who questioned the decision of Ambassador Weah and your Congress for Democratic Change to enter into a coalition with the party of former Speaker Alex Tyler and the party of former President Charles Taylor. What would you say to those people?
Well, it's laughable because this is not the first time for us to enter. In 2011, we went along with former President Charles Taylor party. But Bobby, be aware that in 2005, with the same supported Ellen Johnson Sirleaf, including Senator Prince Johnson, in supported Ellen Johnson Sirleaf. So to suggest that entering into a coalition with the NPP is a wrong thing, it makes sense by a lot. Because these are like regulations. Even if you have President Sirleaf saying that the individuals who are, some of whom have problems in the war, you cannot stop natural warming because the Liberian people have accepted them for the last year. Some of these individuals are officials of government. And so Liberian people are very happy because these individuals, some of them have not committed crime. By associating with President Taylor does not make you guilty of a crime because these are Liberian people and we think it's the best thing to do. We are not talking about reconciliation. And so we are bringing individuals who have interests in their country together. So that's not a wrong thing. I think it's a positive thing for the country.
Vice President Joseph Boakai is running to succeed President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf. What do you think are your coalition's chances of denying Vice President Boakai the presidency?
I think Bagbin and Bwaga is, I don't believe they even can carry in this election because the Unity Party is so unpopular in this country. If you want to say that because he's the vice president of the incumbent party and you're winning, I think it really became a mistake. You have to see what happened in Zambia. You have to see what happened in Accra, in Ghana. The ruling party lost massively to the opposition party, and it doesn't want to be, it's going to occur in Liberia.
Nathaniel McGee is chairman of a coalition of three political parties in Liberia. He was speaking with me from the capital, Monrovia. You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. Today is Monday, the second day of January 2017. I'm James Butte in Washington, and please send your comments and opinions to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time, 16 minutes past the hour. South Sudan's first vice president says he wishes his country peace and development in the new year. Taban Dengai is on a tour of what his aides call hotspots in the greater Equatoria region of the country. He says reports of an ethnic conflict and possible genocide in South Sudan are false. Dengai says South Sudanese should expect peace and reconciliation and healing in 2017.
I'm the first vice president of the republic. The first vice president is for all the geographical location of the whole South Sudan. There's nothing called hotspot. We are working for the stability and a beginning to the whole republic. We want to move with the country forward.
There are concerns that the country could be spiraling into genocide or looming genocide, as some of the reports have put it.
My being in here is a proof that there's nothing called genocide in the Republic of South Sudan. Now, what we are discussing is how to move the country forward, is how to develop the country. Yes, it is true, we have ups and downs, some difficulties on the road, but we are capable of addressing all those issues. There's nothing called genocide. You know, the so-called genocide was being said that it will happen first in Yei. The situation in Yei is not good. I mean, Yei now, this is a proof that there's no looming genocide in the Republic of South Sudan.
What about the implementation of the peace agreement? Because some people are accusing you and President Salva Kiir of colluding to push your former ally, Dr. Riek Machar, out of the system to thwart the full implementation of the peace agreement. What say you?
How did I push Riek Machar out of Juba? He opted to leave Juba, he opted to fight, he opted to be violent. He was in Juba as a very powerful first vice president. We received him in Juba. We made sure that he took the oath of office the same day of his arrival. But he decided to be the president in the waiting. He was a parallel president in Juba. He was denying the government the cooperation needed by the people, the cooperation needed for the implementation of peace agreement. He was a parallel president. He had a parallel council of ministers. He was moving with huge forces in Juba. He was intimidating everybody, including President Salva himself. It's him who shot the first bullet in Juba. I decided to remain with my colleague, the leadership of the SPLM in opposition, so that we continue with the implementation of peace. Because the option of the country is not going back to violence. People have suffered enough. We are continuing with the implementation of this peace. We want the voice of America and everybody in the world to give us the breathing space so that we implement the agreement.
What is the status of the implementation of the peace agreement as we speak? Because there are reports of sporadic fighting in different parts of the country.
You know, in any peace, there are spoilers. There are negative forces in the peace. This was the situation during the CPA. It is the situation now. Peace do not come one day. Yes, it is true, we have signed peace agreement. But as we go along with the implementation, there's a lot of details that we need to put in order and in place. It is not true that there's no peace in the country. There's lull all over the country. Yes, there are pockets here and there, and we are addressing this issue. That's why I'm in Yei. We are moving forward. There's peace in the country. I'm in peaceful Yei. The government has decided to stand with the people who are for peace. Peace is moving forward.
What should the people of South Sudan expect in this new year?
In the new year, they should expect more peace, more development, more delivery of services, reconciliation and healing. You know, I think you are aware, my president have announced national healing and reconciliation, the dialogue. As I'm in here now, we have started with small peace here and there. I just came out from the church, the preaching peace. This year is year of peace, year of more talking to the people of South Sudan. And there's consensus that we must maintain this peace.
Taban Dengai is South Sudan's first vice president. He was speaking with VOA's Peter Clotty from Yei in Yei River State. A South Sudanese church leader says the government should give religious leaders a chance to spearhead the national dialogue, which President Salva Kiir recently announced. Bishop Paul Yugusu says the church is the only neutral body that South Sudanese trust to lead the effort towards peace and reconciliation. Tito Justin reports from Juba.
More than 35 South-Sudanese church leaders, including 21 bishops from various denominations, gathered for 4 days in the Kenyan capital Nairobi last week to talk about the role the church can play to achieve lasting peace in South Sudan. During the conference, Bishop Paul Yugusuk of the Episcopal Church of Sudan and South Sudan said church leaders welcome President Kiir's call for a national dialogue to end the country's cycle of violence. But if it's going to succeed, it should be led by men and women of faith, not politicians. Bishop Yugusuk says the church is the only trusted institution in South Sudan that can bring an end to the fighting.
Where there is fighting, the church is there. The church is the grassroots. Our approach will be bottom-top. So we are capable, we are able to talk to our people to stop the war. Nobody in South Sudan will stop the war, except the church will be able to tell to all people to put down their guns and come for national dialogue.
Earlier this month, President Kiir issued a decree appointing a 42-member committee to develop the agenda of a national dialogue per the agreement on the resolution of the conflict in South Sudan. The president said he would lead the national dialogue initiative and appointed veteran South Sudanese politicians such as Abel Alier, Joseph Lago, Bona Malual Madut, and Francis Madeng as advisors. Bishop Yugusuk says that's not going to work.
If it is the government, they will continue to fight. I want to assure you that the fighting is going on. Both sides are fighting. And we come in to give hope to our people, to tell our people that national dialogue, call for national dialogue by president, is the only way for us to bring peace.
He says the church is the most trusted institution in South Sudan and therefore should lead the national dialogue.
National dialogue is for every stakeholder. And we believe that church has the moral obligation. Church is the body that can call even those who are now fighting, wherever they may be. It's a matter of a wider consultation. If we are given that chance to convene, we will talk to everybody to come on board.
Bishop Yugusuk warns that unless the national dialogue is made inclusive, it will achieve very little, saying it will be much like the national dialogue President Omar al-Bashir orchestrated, which has achieved next to nothing in neighboring Sudan. For VOA News, I am Tito Justin in Juba.
For the first time, the number of international students in the United States topped 1 million over the past year. But some educators and students say comments critical of China and other countries by President-elect Donald Trump have the potential to affect international enrollment in the U.S. universities and colleges. Mariama Diallo reports.
We're going to build the wall. It's going to be a real wall. It's going to be a great wall.
Donald J. Trump is calling for a total and complete shutdown of Muslims entering the United States.
The president-elect's campaign speeches on immigration and visas got a lot of attention from foreign students in the U.S. and international students thinking about attending U.S. colleges. Erica Wang is Chinese and one of 6,000 international students at the State University of New York at Buffalo.
I was still just looking to see, is he going to do whatever he promised? Or is his policy, potential policy change, possibly going to affect us? Because I have heard a lot of panicking right among my friends, definitely.
Via Skype, Stephen Dunnett, the university's vice provost, says campaign rhetoric can be different than actual government policy. However, Dunnett, who just returned from China, says the recent call between Trump and the leader of Taiwan had many in China talking.
The Chinese were quite taken aback by what appears to them to be the sudden abandonment of the one China policy. Some colleagues said to me, well, you know, this would come at a price. And there are an awful lot of our citizens studying in your universities. And, you know, that's a huge capital outflow from our country. And if you're not going to be welcoming to us, then maybe our students shouldn't go there.
Evelyn Levinson is the director of international admissions at American University. She says the admissions staff is reinforcing the school's message of tolerance to reassure potential applicants.
There is no crystal ball right now to say what will happen, but certainly a lot of questions were raised. So this fall, we went back out to cities in Europe. I personally was in the Middle East and in Central America, and someone else from our office was in Hong Kong and Singapore.
A recent study by the Institute for International Education says that China remains the top sending country, followed by India and Saudi Arabia. IIE President Alan Goodman says he doesn't think the election's outcome will affect international enrollment. For nearly 100 years, the Institute's data show no major changes, except for a two-year drop after the 9/11 attacks.
We've looked at this during periods when isolationism was the declared foreign policy of the United States. We have looked at it through periods of recession and depression. We've looked at it through periods of war and conflict.
He says because the country's higher education is run at the state level, federal policy matters less than what the individual schools do to reach out to students. In Washington, Mariama Diallo, VOA News.
Time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. Very good morning to you, Samson.
Good morning, James. We begin with preparations for the 2017 African Cup of Nations Gabon 2017, which kicks off in 13 days' time, as West Ham midfielder Sofiane Feghouli and defender Carl Medjani have both been dropped as new Algerian coach Georges Lenkins unveiled his 23-man squad for the African Cup of Nations on Sunday. Feghouli has scored 11 goals in 42 appearances for Algeria, including a goal in the 2014 World Cup in Brazil, which helped his country advance to the last 16. Elsewhere, Hull City have had an African Cup of Nations request accepted by Egypt, but fellow Premier League side Stoke City haven't been that lucky. Ahmed El Mohandi will be joining up with his national side Egypt this week ahead of the African Cup of Nations, but before that, City have managed to keep him on board for their clash at West Brom January the 2nd. Fellow Premier League side Stoke City's request hasn't been accepted, with their winger Ramadan Sobhi set to depart for the competition. Stoke, of course, will play a day later than City on Tuesday, January the 3rd. As the race for the Premier League title hots up, some coaches will not be comfortable having their players going away for as much as 4 weeks for the African Cup of Nations. And that's why Manchester United boss Jose Mourinho is frustrated with the Ivory Coast after they refused to delay Eric Bailly's African Nations Cup departure by 24 hours. Bailly returned to the starting 11 in Saturday's 2-1 win over Middlesbrough, and Mourinho was hoping he would be available to take on West Brom on Monday as well. That could not happen without the consent of his national side, who are preparing for the tournament in Gabon, and coach Michel Dusia was not willing to take the risk. And to Morocco, where that country's national team coach Hervé Renard says his target is a quarterfinal finish in the 2017 African Cup of Nations in Gabon. The Atlas Lions, who are in Group C at AFCON 2017 alongside DR Congo, Cote d'Ivoire and Togo, play their opening match on the 16th against the Leopards in what is expected to be a cracker. And to Uganda, where the Cranes of Uganda contingent are already in Tunis, the Tunisian capital, ahead of the training camp and the first international friendly game against Tunisia, which will come up on the 4th of January. In athletics news, Africans once again dominated the annual Sao Sylvester road race in Sao Paulo, with Kenya Jemima Sumgong setting a record in the women's race and Ethiopia Luel Aleme winning the men's race. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. Over to you, James, in Washington, and have yourself a happy new year.
Thank you, Samson. And that's it for this Monday, January 2nd edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I'm James Barton in Washington, hoping you have a productive week.
Voice of America's news, talk, and music programs are now at the tip of your fingers. Find everything at www.voaafrica.com. Listen to VOA's program lineup live anytime, day or night. Pick out your favorite shows and listen anytime you want. Download our podcasts. Check VOA Mobile from your cell phone. Subscribe to VOA Newsfeed. voanews.com.